Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have a returning author to share with you. She is L.B. Johnson. A former commercial pilot, L.B. Johnson, she grew up out west. After hanging up her wings, she received a doctorate in criminal justice-related field in order to pursue a career in federal service. She lives in Chicago with her husband and rescue dog, Abby. She is active in animal rescue and donates 100% of her writing proceeds to animal rescue organizations across the United States, as well as Search Dog Foundation. Her books include the number one Amazon bestsellers, The Book of Barkley and Saving Grace, A Story of Adoption. She also has been awarded the Reader's Favorite International Silver Book Award for Excellence in Writing. And you can check out her writing updates and news at her author's webpage, lbjohnsonauthor.blogspot.com. And right now, we are going to find out what she's been up to this past year since we last spoke. And we're going to learn more about her newest book titled Small Town Roads. So let's get going. Welcome back, LB.
Thank you, Pat. It's great to talk again.
Yes, it's good to have you back. I enjoyed our first interview so much. First conversation was so great that I'm happy that we're having this opportunity again. And so as I mentioned, the last time we talked was about your two books, The Book of Barkley. There's Abby, right?
Yes.
We talked about your two books, The Book of Barkley and Saving Grace. And folks can listen to that interview on your page at the speakuptalkradio.com website. Well, before we get into your newest book, let's play a little bit of catch up. Other than writing, what else have you been up to this past year?
Well, if you just heard the bark in the background, we have a new senior rescue dog, Abby Lab, who was adopted through Love of Labs, Indiana. She'd been dropped at a Hike Hill shelter either as a family surrender or a stray, we're not sure, but we're happy to have her in our home. And I've also written my third book, my first Christian fiction. It's a coming-of-age story set in rural Illinois.
All righty. Well, we're going to get to that. And I love the fact that you rescue dogs. We rescue cats. In fact, I just picked up another two cats, so now I have 13.
Wow.
I know. Getting a little crazy around here. Someone's got to stop me. So let's talk about your book, Small Town Roads. Is that a memoir?
No, it's actually my first fiction piece. The characters are not based on any one particular person I know, though some of the personalities in the book are blends of people I've met throughout my life. But they're all fictional characters set in a very rural town in western Illinois. The main character is a law enforcement graduate from a college in Chicago, and after losing her parents and her brother to illness over a period of a few years, she had planned on getting an exciting job in federal service like the FBI or something, but instead ends up in this tiny little town when she inherits her late aunt's house. Was not the life she expected at all.
So why did you decide to write this?
Well, I wanted to do a piece that was based on the values I was raised in, not any particular religion, but just in a Christian home where family was very important, neighbors came together, and we tried to love our neighbor as ourselves. And I took those values, and I wanted to apply them to a modern setting with a young person to kind of show that the trials and tribulations that we all go through as we come of age are things that can be lessened if we share them with friends and neighbors and have faith in a higher power that there is light at the end of the tunnel during difficult periods. So that was the message I wanted to convey. And having lived in a very tiny rural town at one point, I was able to interject some elements of humor of what it's like to live somewhere where there isn't a coffee shop, there isn't fast food, there's no movie theater or mall, and pretty much your evening is spent sitting on an old porch with a glass of tea, waving at your neighbors. It's a completely different life than what we have here in the city.
Absolutely, and one that not many people have any knowledge of at all.
No, I found that the short time I lived in a very small town absolutely captivating, and had not my career moved me to a larger urban area, I probably would have happily retired there.
And I read somewhere, just to your point here, somewhere on your website, where it says Small Town Roads is a loving story about an old, slow place where the terrible loneliness of grief eases because ordinary people decide to be community. And that just speaks to exactly what you're saying. There's nothing to do but sit on an old porch and drink tea and talk with human beings.
Yes, it was the character of Rachel, who's a young rookie police officer because her FBI dreams had to kind of get put aside. She doesn't have anyone her own age in the area, so she befriends an elderly widowed neighbor who's childless and very lonely and grieving herself. And even though the two women are completely different in age and background, they share a commonality of grief and concern for others, and it forges a very strong friendship. And I won't give away anything in the book, but there is a event midway through the book where Rachel's life is threatened, and her neighbor is witness to that, and it really helps them bond stronger as almost like family, even though they're not related by blood. Only by caring and concern. And that was the message I wanted to put through the book, as opposed to anything specifically religious-based, although there's a faith-based theme throughout the book, because it was something that was very important to me growing up as a young woman.
And I like the idea that we're talking about community. Let's talk about community for a moment. Is it still around?
Yes, I actually live in a basically a village within the city of Chicago, and I think we have a total of maybe 8,000 or 9,000 people, but yet I still have a sense of the small town. I talk to my neighbors. My neighbors watch out for my house if my husband and I are traveling. We walk and wave at people. There's still, even within a big city, there's still a sense of community that exists out there. At least in the Midwest, I found it more so than in maybe other parts of the world, but I really get a sense of belonging to this little town that I lived in.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it something that just is, or do you as the individual have to either seek that out or help create it?
You have to be open to it. I mean, it's so easy to just go, oh, you know, my neighbors are all strangers, and, you know, not make eye contact and not wave, and, you know, people live in fear of the unknown, and it's sometimes just easier to just lift up a hand and give a smile, and quite often you'll get a smile and a wave back.
Mm-hmm. That's what I love about this book, that it inspires us to kind of go backwards and not this mad rush with technology where everybody's staring at their phones and no one's really talking to anyone or getting to know anyone.
Yes, and another thing Rachel found is part of the book is written through first person and part is third person, is Rachel keeps an online diary, not a blog for the public, but just an online journal of her growing up and the changes of days as she embraces this new life. And one of the things she does to pass the time is she reads to another elderly neighbor, a World War II veteran that has no family, as his eyesight doesn't allow him to read. And in reading books and talking to this veteran, she learns so much about generations that she knew nothing about other than just a few brief history lessons in school. And it really opened up her mind to a much broader, bigger world than where she lives now.
Mm-hmm. And that allowed you then to write in the past, the present, and the future, all in the same book.
It was difficult. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep the voices separate, where we have Evelyn, the elderly widow next door, and Rachel, and then Harry, the other widow, and the other widower on the block. And there's other cast and characters, including some of Rachel's college friends. And she does forge some friendships with people her own age as she opens herself up to being part of a community again, because after the loss of her parents and her brother, she really just shut herself off from everything other than her schoolwork. Mm-hmm. So it was a big change for her. And the story rounds out with a very, very satisfying conclusion in a very special relationship she forms with someone other than Evelyn that was completely unexpected and probably something she would not have found had she not opened herself up to love and faith again.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, you talk about characters. Let's talk about how you write the characters. Do you use any kind of a questionnaire to help you get to know them better ahead of time, like what's in your character's refrigerator right now or on her nightstand or in her bedroom floor? How do you form these people?
The main character, Rachel, is very, very loosely based on what I imagine my mother was like when she was in her 20s, as she was a deputy sheriff, one of the first females in her county. And although they didn't adopt me until they were almost 40, I always had a sense of playfulness about her that I imagine was more pronounced when she was a very young woman. And I wanted to bring some of that aspects of personality out in the main character, Rachel. I basically just took some notes as far as what their house would look like so I could make a creative mental picture of their surroundings. And once I had a good idea of their surroundings, then I could put them within the surroundings and have them think a certain way or perform something within the home a certain way. It made it more real to me.
Mm-hmm. And so as you were writing them, did they take off on their own or did they pretty much stay true to what you had in mind initially?
They kind of take off on their own. I don't actually come up with a definitive even ending of the book until I'm about halfway through it. I have a general outline of the message I want to put out, the length of the book, and what the underlying and overlying themes will be. But the actual dynamics of the climax and the ending of the book are fairly shaded in gray until I really have a good grasp of the characters' personalities and what drives them.
Mm-hmm. And when and how do you select the names of the characters?
They're usually selected either from just very popular names for the day and age. In this case, there's a couple characters that have older biblical names because that is something that is found within my family. And so I literally just like the way that the name blows off my tongue when I say it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And that usually happens up front, or do you build these characters and then their name kind of makes
their name comes
apparent?
Up as they've developed, because I really can't put a name to someone that I don't really know yet.
Right.
So once I feel like they're family, then I can give them a name.
I agree. It's like naming a pet. You have to see it first and spend a little time.
Yes. Like Abby, our lab was named after the character Abby on NCIS since I work in federal law enforcement. And I'm a scientist type, not the kind of exciting job you see on TV. But that's where her name came from. And it just fit her when we got her.
No, I get that. I absolutely get that. Well, now I read one review. It says Small Town Roads by L.B. Johnson, I'll paraphrase this, is an eloquent Christian novel portraying the introspection of a community. Despite their ages and generations, each of the characters portrayed displays their personal and spiritual growth, providing a thought-provoking and insightful story. It was encouraging to see Rachel's faith progress and bloom and blossom, and this is an inspirational novel that will please those who enjoy reading meaningful Christian-based, faith-inspired books. 5 stars. And so you have won some recognition. I read somewhere about NPR. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, yes. Northern Public Radio here in DeKalb, Illinois, selected Small Town Roads as one of just a few books that they had as their spring reading program as a must read. And I actually did a live interview at the NPR station of the university, and they really enjoyed the book.
How exciting for you.
It was. I hadn't been interviewed in that type of environment before, so it was really fun to see the inner workings of an actual radio station, and they couldn't have been more welcoming and supportive of my writing effort.
Oh, I love that. I'm glad you had that opportunity. I also saw on your website that says someone wrote that this book asks big questions. What is it to be human? What is it to live the good life? And what is it to leave that good life? So let's just talk about that for a minute. What is it to be human? What point were you making or you wanted your readers to take away?
I wanted them to realize that we're not all perfect. We all come from different backgrounds. We come from different faiths or even lack of faith. We come from different socioeconomic status, and yet all of us, I think, worldwide just want to be accepted and loved. I think that's just a natural human element for anyone. And in opening ourselves up to that love, sometimes we're hurt, and we have to learn how to move past that and look at the good around us in order to feel that love and acceptance again. It's a growing process for any human being, no matter what their background is.
That's so true. What did she mean when she said, what is it to live the good life, and what is it to leave that good life?
Well, a good life may not be, by definition, what people may think it is. I used to live in a very, very large, expensive home that I bought myself. Was single for a long time. And I rattled around in it with lots of nice things, and I wasn't happy. I just wasn't happy. All I did was worry about paying for everything or buying more stuff. And I literally sold the house, gave all its contents to charity, and bought a little bungalow that's 100 years old that's paid for, and pared down everything to just what is around me are things that have meaning. They're family heirlooms or antiques I restored myself. They're photography I've done. They're things of my husband's. He's an engineer, so he has quite a collection of little gadgets around the house. And I found that I'm very much at home here. So what makes, you know, it a good life is not necessarily material things. It's being in an environment where you feel safe and happy.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think a lot of people would like to do that. I think it's easy to accumulate things that really have no value after the first 5 minutes. And how refreshing would it be just to shed all of that and to start over and, as you say, just bring the meaningful parts and pieces into your life?
Oh, it was. I gave a large portion of my belongings to veterans groups. And then there was a young couple that I knew socially through my community I lived in that had lost a home, and they weren't able to afford to do more than just rent a little place, and they didn't have any money to buy new furnishings because there wasn't insurance, I don't believe. And they were also on a waiting list to adopt a baby. So I literally donated like 5 rooms of furniture to them with all the, you know, pictures and decorative stuff so they could decorate this little rental home they got.
Wow.
And they were just so thankful, and I was just happy to get rid of all this stuff. But 2 months later, I got a note that they got their baby boy, that the caseworkers, you know, went to their home and were very happy with it, and it made my day.
Yeah.
It was just by one simple act, I could make a young couple's life, you know, their life wish come true and help them with the adoption process. Being adopted myself, that was very special for me.
Oh, I get that. And how often do we have opportunities to do that? So what you did is basically created your own opportunity.
Yes. And like I said, they were doing me a favor, because otherwise I was going to have to make some more calls to get the stuff all picked up. And they just showed up with a moving van, and next thing you know, my house is empty. So they did me a favor as well.
Oh, I love it. That's a good story. I'm going to have to think about that. I'm kind of at that point in life thinking about shedding a couple hundred tons of pounds of stuff. And so you might be inspiring me as well. So after you wrote this book, what did that do for you? How did that change you?
Well, I was very satisfied to actually write fiction for the first time after having 2 best-selling memoirs. That was a challenge for me, and I was very proud to get it done. And I was really proud when Reader's Favorite, who gave my first book the Nonfiction Book Award, recognized my last book, Small Town Roads, with a 5-star review on their social media page. And it's entered in a writing contest for them. So it was a feeling of satisfaction just to do something that was a challenge for me, because I'm not trained as a writer. I'm a scientist by trade and a former pilot. So I'm a technical person, not a literary person. So crafting these books has given me a sense of satisfaction I did not expect.
Wow, I imagine so. And I think that's also inspiring to folks who are listening to think, oh, no, you know, I'm not creative. I've never written before. Well, hey, just kind of reach in, pull from your heart, and you can do it.
And caffeine helps.
Well, that leads me to one of my questions. Any favorite munchies or drinks or something that you must have when you're writing? Apparently coffee, right?
Yeah, I do my best writing early in the morning on my days off or on a day that I've got a shift where I'm going in later. And generally, you know, up at 5:30 or 6 in the morning with a pot of coffee and the house is completely quiet. And my husband's got the dog out for a long walk before he leaves for work. And I can, you know, even if I get just 30 or 45 minutes every morning, that's my quiet time. And that's where I find that the creative juices really do flow better. Mm-hmm. By mid-afternoon, I can pretty much all I can get out is basically a Homer Simpson equivalent of beer, donut. But mornings I can create.
I love that. So at the end of your morning creation, do you feel exhausted or do you feel energized for the day?
I actually feel energized. I feel like I've done something. It's like, you know, when you like do your workout or do your power walk or, you know, it's like I did this and I planned on doing this and I can do it again. And it just makes it easier to go into the next day and write a little bit more. And if you keep writing, eventually your story will be told.
Yep. So now that this book is complete, what's next?
Well, I have a novella that's going into a anthology from a number of different authors. I'll announce more of that when it's coming out. My part is written, but the other authors are still in the creative process, so the book may not come out until spring, but it was fun to craft a novella in a completely different genre than anything I've written before. But for now, I'm going to just take some time off to read myself. There's so many good books by indie authors out there, and I've made so many friends among the author community that I have a stack of books written that other people have created, and I'm looking forward to just curling up on my antique couch and reading myself.
And you could learn so much from other people's work as well, so just because you're reading doesn't mean that you're not coming up with other ideas or learning for your next book.
Oh, if you want to write, you have to read. Mm-hmm. You take away so much of it, just how sentences are structured, grammar, flow. I definitely need an editor as far as grammar, but you do learn a lot by reading the work of other people, especially different styles of books. I have everything from science fiction to historical literature here, and I enjoy all of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that perfectly well. Well, enjoy that time. Let's talk a bit about the whole process now. Let's start with your cover. How did that come about?
That actually was a photograph that I took. Photography is kind of an amateur hobby of mine. And I used to pass a very, very old barn in Indiana where I used to live on my way into the city. And I always wanted to stop and take a picture of it, but it was private property, and I didn't wish to trespass, so I would just pass it by. And one day, there was a realtor out there putting a for sale sign up for the property. It was just land with a barn, no house. And I stopped and asked her if I could photograph the barn. And she said, yes, absolutely. And I noticed this old rail spike basically pounded into the door of the barn to use as a handle for something or a hold point. And just with the starkness of the winter landscape and just the how old the barn was, I just took the picture and it just stuck out at me. And when I was looking through all my photos trying to pick, you know, which one is going to go on this book, that picture just really, really stood out for me.
I like that was your picture and that really meant something to you, which actually kind of just ties into who you are and that you're surrounding yourself with places and things and people and feelings that really mean something to you. So rather than a piece of stock art, this is an important photo.
Yeah, that's the same. The Book of Barclay, people ask, is that actually Barclay on the cover? And I said, yes, he's waiting for his person to come inside. And my second book was actually taken at a childhood home. So both covers had a lot of meaning for me personally, not just because I took the photo, but they were, you know, souls or places that I love dearly.
Right. And I'm sure moving forward with future books, you will do the same thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the publishing process. How did that come about for you?
Well, I went through, on this book, I went through a Christian publishing firm. It was Duon Press. They were wonderful to work with, and they basically guide you through the writing process as far as what you have to do. They do all the hard stuff. They do all the formatting. They provide editorial services, although I did have a professional editor work with me throughout the writing process, and they just gave it a final grammatical edit. But really made the job easier. I was just like, here are my words, make it a book. And they did. I know a lot of authors that do the self-publishing thing through Amazon or other venues and have been thoroughly happy with the results, but I just didn't want the extra stress because I do work full-time and have an elderly father I tend to and a family. So for me, just going with a somewhat more traditional publishing firm that could get this put together for me for a small fee was just a godsend.
I'm familiar with Zulon Press. I actually interviewed a couple of authors who have had their books published through them, and they are also a part of Salem Media Group. And my flagship radio stations in the Cleveland area originated with Salem, and so that's all part of Zulon, so I know them well. So that's important that you found somebody that can do that work for you so that you could still maintain your life.
Yes, and like I said, I've had author friends that rose to the challenge of doing that themselves and were very happy. It obviously saved them, you know, some money, but I had a really good publishing experience with my first publisher. I just chose, because this was a faith-based book with a Christian theme, I wanted to use a Christian publisher. I figured they could help better guide me through getting the message I wanted out through the editing process.
Exactly, and plus their target audience is the Christian-based audience, so they can probably help you promote it as well.
Right, but one thing that came out that I liked is I've had a couple reviewers said, you know, I hesitated to read this because, you know, I'm not really an active Christian, but I just loved the message of the book, and it wasn't preachy at all, and that was exactly what I intended. I wanted to basically discuss the quiet elements of faith in a higher power as opposed to any specific religious group.
Yep. No, I would say mission accomplished, huh? Let's talk about promotion, social media. A lot of folks listening, I'm sure, especially if they're authors, would be interested to know how you go about promoting. Are there any social media sites that you find better than others? Just give us a few tips.
I've had good luck with a publicist in Ireland, actually in Dublin, Ireland. Books Go Social is the name of the organization, and they do some very effective and very cost-effective and affordable social media promotions for authors of all types. I had great luck with them on all three of my books. I also encourage writers to start a blog and get a social media following, not necessarily, say, Twitter or Instagram, where you're just putting little snippets of thought or pictures out there, but you want something that is actually going to engage the audience with your creative thoughts. I've talked to authors that said, well, you know, I have 110,000 followers on, you know, Instagram, but, you know, when I published my book, I only sold like 50. But I've talked to people that said, well, I've got a blog that got, you know, 400 readers, but they all bought the book. So you have to engage your audience. So use a social media platform that really lets your personality shine through, and not just what you're wearing that day or eating for breakfast.
Exactly.
But I'm guilty of that. I have my Facebook page where every Saturday everyone gets to see what I cooked for breakfast. So I'm guilty of that guilty pleasure as well. But it's not always an effective marketing tool.
No, I understand. No, I think you just gave us some great advice. Thank you for sharing that. I think our folks will appreciate that. Well, we've kind of hopped around. Is there anything we missed, though, that you would like to talk about today?
No, I just want to thank everyone that supports authors. And I always tell people the best thing you can do for an author is not just read the book, but if you genuinely like it, review it. Mm-hmm. If you have criticism for the book, authors often just appreciate a quiet note with some advice.
Right.
I've learned a lot from readers. But if you have something positive to say, don't hesitate to say it, because feedback from authors is really important. We know our message is being heard. We know what we do is worthy of the time and the effort and often the expense involved. So if you know an author support them in any way you can.
Again, I love that advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Well, I, like as you said at the beginning of the interview, my author blog is lbjohnsonauthor.blogspot.com, and the books are available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as a number of brick-and-mortar bookstores, but it's probably easiest to find them online. I have Kindle and Nook versions of Small Town Roads available through Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and there are books also found in a number of Christian bookstores throughout the country.
All righty, so you are easy to find. Head over to lbjohnsonauthor.blogspot.com and find out more with the three books. And so before we head out, any final words that you'd like to leave us with?
Thank everyone for the support. My family's been able to donate many thousands of dollars to animal rescue and animal support groups such as Search Dog Foundation with the proceeds of my writing. Since my husband and I both have gainful employment, we're able to do that. And it's been very, very rewarding to see the difference we've been able to make in some unwanted animals' lives to find them a forever home. So for that, I particularly appreciate the support of the writing community.
And for that, I especially appreciate you. That is such a beautiful thing to do. And thank you so much for helping these little animals through your writing. Such an important cause. And you're a beautiful person. LB Johnson, author.blogspot.com. LB, thanks so much. And keep us posted on new books, and we should do this again.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. It was an honor to be featured again. I appreciated it.